Around the League from UGASports.com. I'm Dane Young, joined as always by Brent Rollins from Pro Football Focus. The head coach, Jim Donnan, out this week doing a little travel, so he will rejoin us later in the season. It's a bye week for Georgia, Brent, but still a couple games of note in the SEC slate here. And we're kind of at that point where there's a path open for five or six teams to make some noise in the SEC, but those doors begin to close very, very quickly from this point. While I bring up the SEC standings, just overall big picture, middle of October, what are you focused on in terms of what the SEC is going to be doing from this point through the end of the regular season?
I think it's basically the question of, do you get someone else other than the traditional powers that be? Does someone like Tennessee this week against Alabama and moving forward, or Missouri next, you know, not this week, but next week, or moving forward, do they make some noise? Do they actually sort of take a leap versus it being whoever wins Alabama, LSU versus Georgia in an SEC championship game type setting?
SEC East, Georgia undefeated. Georgia's the only undefeated team in the conference, though Alabama is undefeated in conference play, did lose the game to Texas. Georgia 7-0, 4-0 in the league. In the driver's seat in the SEC East, but you start looking at those teams that only have one loss. Florida's in this if they can find a way in Jacksonville. Missouri, I've been very impressed with. I had someone ask me who's the second best team in the SEC East. I said, I think it's Missouri, and there's a pretty good amount of information to back that up at this point. If Tennessee shocks the world against Alabama second year in a row, you start to think of the Vols being right there. You know, I thought Kentucky was going to be better than they are. It's a pretty rough team at this point. 5-2 overall, 2-2 in the league. SEC East, though, Brent, it's really the big name powers, the Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, but Missouri, a team that I thought would be close to firing its coach this year, right there at the top.
Yeah, and I think we talked about that going into the season. Like, it's time for Drinkwitz to win the games he should win for the most part. And I think they've done that. And you look at their schedule. Now, we'll say last week against Kentucky, and we'll talk maybe a little bit about that later, but they played from a grading standpoint and execution standpoint, played their worst offensive game and still dunked on Kentucky. So yep. Like, their ceiling, I think, as an overall team, because of just some individual talents that they have combined with scheme, they're worrisome. Now, overall talent, Georgia should win out over these next 5 weeks. But I also think Georgia faces a five-week, and I include Georgia Tech in that 5 weeks, gauntlet of just consecutive opponents that can potentially beat them, unlike anything they've faced in the past – you know, three or four years in the SEC, because for the most part, those other teams haven't had the true ability to beat them. Also with them kind of coming down maybe just a little bit, but 5 weeks in a row like that, they usually haven't had that. It's usually been a Vanderbilt or a weaker South Carolina or a weaker Missouri sort of tucked in there. Now that's not the case. All those guys are playing well, and they're all playing them consecutively when you throw in Ole Miss.
The thing I'll say about Missouri is that with Brock Bowers out now for the next month, Missouri is going to have the best offensive player on the field in every game it plays, and that's Luther Burden. The guy's special. He's an NFL stud, and they found a way to use him this year. I don't know if they had unlocked that game last year. That's happened this season. SEC West, Alabama in the driver's seat there, but you start looking ahead to just a massive game against LSU, where the Tigers having two losses overall, Florida State being one of those. It just seemed like after Ole Miss, the LSU was going to be kind of down and out, but I haven't seen that yet. So we may end up with one of those scenarios where you get a little round robin of Alabama, LSU, and Ole Miss all beating each other.
And Ole Miss is the biggest Tennessee fan on earth this weekend. Because if Tennessee would happen to beat Alabama, now LSU beats Alabama, like now Ole Miss is back in terms of potentially being there. Like, it's just but obviously they still got to play Georgia. But still, yeah, they're very much big orange fans this weekend.
I was thinking in terms of parity, the funniest SEC championship, and I know that we're a Georgia-centric channel, so I'm just saying for the comedy of how much parity there's been in the SEC, if it wound up Missouri versus Ole Miss in Atlanta, like, that would just be jarring.
Yes.
It's possible.
It's very possible, but like you said, it's how believable is that? Like, is it really actually – I mean, it very well could, because technically when you look at it, Tennessee, Missouri – Ole Miss, to a certain extent, all those teams control their own destiny, that phrase, in terms of actually getting to the playoff. You know, any of these teams went out with just one loss. You know, like, look at Ole Miss, for example. You've got an LSU win. If you happen to beat Georgia, you get an SEC championship, and you're 12-1, you're in the playoff. Missouri, same thing with Georgia and an SEC championship win. You're in the playoff. Tennessee beating Alabama, Georgia, you're in the playoff with one loss. So it's going to be a fun, you know, 3-4 weeks as we really get this sorted out.
I mean, that's the fun part of dreaming this time of season, is there's a path for a ton of teams, even if it's unrealistic. Just like I can tell you, Iowa can be in the college football playoff. Totally plausible as we stand here right now. But you wouldn't think that just based on how we've seen them. I want to look at some statistics just of the league overall. I don't know how much value you, as someone that does Pro Football Focus, put in quarterback rating, but I thought that was at least a good starting point overall. Very little, that's what I assumed. But in terms of quarterback rating, Jaden Daniels best in the league right now, Jalen Milroe second, Brady Cook third. And I think when you look at Brady Cook's statistics, it's pretty similar to Carson Beck in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and he's actually added a lot of the running element to it as well. I think last week against Kentucky, he had 37 yards and a touchdown on design runs as well as scrambles. And that's what's actually unique. Obviously, folks who listen to us for the most part care about Georgia, but that's what's unique about Georgia's schedule coming up. Is with Cook and then Jackson Dart and then Joe Milton, you have quarterbacks who blend a little bit of the running element as well as the throwing element.
Daniels, Milroe, Cook, Dart, Beck. I think most people would say that's the handful of top quarterbacks in the league. Down at the bottom, the Learys, the Peyton Thorns, Max Johnson's down there, which he had one great half. It's been a bit of a struggle for A&M since then. Overall, though, when you see Jaden Daniels here on the statistics for top passer in the league, you jump over to running stats. Let me make sure I have this pulled up here. He's right there, too. So I think if you had to pick SEC Offensive Player of the Year, probably looking at Jaden Daniels.
It's him thus far, and it's even him in terms of when you think about looking at him for the biggest prize, the Heisman numbers. And what's going to be interesting for him is, can he have that Heisman moment game against Alabama? Because it's one where when you combine the rushing statistics for him, I mean, he's already right at like 3,000 yards from scrimmage, almost like 30 touchdowns already. And this one actually makes an interesting point that I had thought about for this Tennessee-Alabama game, looking back at Tennessee over the last few weeks. I wonder if there's a lot of Vol fans that secretly say, hey, can Jalen Wright get like most of the carries and Small get just a few? You know, their tempo and the way they sub in and out and do things, it lends itself to, you know, both of them kind of splitting. But looking at just sheer production, Wright is by far better on a per carry basis, and you just watch him way more patient than Small. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if Tennessee says, all right, right, you're getting 20 to 25 this week. Small, you're going to get like 10 carries.
Main thing that stands out to me, this is not the year of the dominant running backs at Georgia and Alabama. Edwards good. Jace McClellan, solid player. These are not Derrick Henrys of the past. This is not Najee Harris. This is not Nick Chubb. Don't exist there.
Well, I mean, even look at the entirety of this list. Is any of those guys a top 3-round pick?
I was stunned that Cody Schrader had the second most rushing yards in the league. I think he was a solid player, but nothing that just wows you.
No. Other than Daniels. Daniels might end up being the as a runner because of he might be in that top 3-round guy.
And so the ability or inability to establish the run may be a reason the SEC has more parity this year. You start looking at receiver stats, though, it's the guy I thought it would be. It's Malik Nabers at LSU. It's Luther Burden, who I think is the best offensive player in the league, this side of Brock Bowers. Bowers is a tight end, being top 10 on this list, even missing some time already, is really impressive. A lot of good receivers on this that I think in terms of NFL future, you'll see the Evan Stewarts, the Anais Smiths, those guys in the NFL. I think Marcus Rosemary Jackson plays a long time in the NFL, maybe even a Ricky Pearsall getting to the right team.
Yeah, and what's amazing with Bowers in this, I think I looked recently, he was the only tight end in the top 50 in the FBS, or Power 5 or FBS, one of them. I think Power 5 in terms of receiving yards. So just him as a threat, like, you can't understate what he is to Georgia's offense. Now, I don't think Georgia's offense is actually going to look the look of it all that different from what it has. You just won't get the quick stuff to Bowers, the quick touches that he normally got. But, yeah, he's on a different level. But, yeah, I think the most of those guys, they're in the top, especially Neighbors. Neighbors is competing to be that sort of wide receiver two, wide receiver three type guy.
He is. And overall, just team statistics, I'm not going to pull this one out, but LSU has gained the most yards of any team in the conference. Georgia second, Missouri third on that list. Alabama ninth. Alabama's offense has not had to score a lot, leaning on the defense.
And it's, and we've kind of talked about it weekly here, but it's literally deep ball, running game, or nothing else. And it's like Milroe's splits are unreal in terms of how amazing he is at throwing the deep ball versus anything else.
We are presented by Breda Pest Management and Connor Grading and Landscaping. We'll tell you about them throughout the show. We're going to start with Alabama and Tennessee and keep the flow going there, Brent, because Alabama, a 9-point favorite at home, over under on that game, 48.5, just a different plane from what we've seen from these two teams, at least in the last few years. I like Alabama at home to find a way to win this just because I've seen Tennessee's offense struggle so mightily in the last few weeks. I'm curious your take, though.
Same. And mainly because of, can Tennessee actually get something in the throwing game? Because they just haven't been able to create explosive plays or any sort of consistency in the passing game. But what's amazing when you think that over-under, there was 101 points scored in this game last year. And I bet the first team to 20 wins.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be old school, throw it deep or run the football, you know, pressure the QB, who turns it over. I think like that, like the stuff that normally matters in football games outside of just great players, those things are going to matter this weekend. But we talked about Milroe. So last week against Arkansas, Milroe again, 4 of 8 for 177 yards and 2 TDs on throws over 20 yards. He's now 19 of 31 for 737, 9 touchdowns, and a 99 passing grade on throws over 20. Outside of that, it's nothing. It's legitimately nothing. It's 60% of his passing yards. And the other part that's interesting, the biggest thing I think that's interesting about this game is Milroe, I think, is third in the conference in terms of second or third in conference in terms of overall pressure rate. He's been pressured about almost 40% of his dropbacks. Well, Tennessee is first in the conference in pass rush grade and gets after QBs. Barron and James Pierce Jr. on the edge have almost as many pressures as in Georgia's entire front four, 17 players that have played. Like, so can they pressure Milroe big time? Can they get after him? And then also, can Tennessee run the ball? Last week, 247 for Tennessee against A&M, who we thought was that sort of run-stuffing team. Tennessee did what they wanted in the running game last week.
And I also wonder if Alabama's going to be able to run the ball, because you remember Florida-Tennessee, Florida just dominated the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to think, if you look back at that tape, Alabama's thinking, well, if we can just lean on them up front, that'll mitigate the pass rush. We'll stay in a lot of short down situations and not allow – I mean, Milroe can escape. I'm not worried about that for Alabama. But at least just keep Tennessee's edge rushers at base. Just aesthetically, this game to me in the last few years have just been wide receivers open. Do you remember – A&M when Johnny Manziel was tossing to Mike Evans and Josh Reynolds, and like anytime the camera panned down the field, it seemed like there was not another player on the screen, and you just wondered, how did those guys always get so open? And I have felt that, especially last year with Jalin Hyatt, that mm-hmm. was the case against against Alabama, but even in years past with Devontae Smith, some of the great Alabama receivers, there's just been open guys that, and even if they're not open, you throw the ball up and you trust them to make a play. I don't see that talent on either side for Alabama or Tennessee in this case. Maybe yeah. Jermaine Burton can do it a little bit, but not consistently. And I definitely don't see the Hyatts and the Tillmans out there for Tennessee. And I think that's the biggest difference in Tennessee this season. That, and I think quarterback has been a bit of a downgrade to Joe Milton. And I'm sure the PFF stats bear that out.
And he's the lowest pass, has the lowest passing grade in the SEC. So yeah, it sort of bears that out. The interesting thing though about Milroe is he tries to be QB. Like, sit in the pocket, hang in there, make plays, when oftentimes to me, he just needs to go. And maybe this is the game he just goes, because his, one of the things that we measure at PFF is pressure to sack rate. So like, hey, when you're pressured, at what percentage do you get sacked? Which is really a quarterback measure. His is the highest in the conference. It's like 38%. So almost half the time that he's pressured, he gets sacked. So it's one where he's consistently holding on to the football versus getting rid of it versus, say, Carson Beck. His number in that is in the teens. It's really low. Even when he is pressured, he's finding ways to get rid of the football or you know, that kind of thing. So if Tennessee can do what it wants to do, get after the QB, run the football, this is a four-quarter game. This is who turns it over. This is, you know, field goal type game. If Alabama's able to run the football and Tennessee can't get after the QB, Alabama, you know, I think, you know, wins by like 10 or something like that, 27-17.
My brother-in-law is an Alabama fan, and he said, I think Alabama would be better if it ran the triple option right now. Like, I think the offense would be more explosive that way because Milroe would do more. Like you say, like he has all the ability to get out of the pocket, do things on the move, and he likes to stay there. I think he's been coached to stay there and work in the system that's there. I don't know that he's quite that quarterback, and we'll see how that changes and evolves. But, you know, we saw that Alabama 6-1, 4-0 in the league, played a tight game with Texas, so –
they're right where they need to be. Alabama, in terms of just the, I thought they'd have another loss or two by now, or like just from the way they played early, and they've managed to truly lean into the identity of this team, which is defense, pass rush, run game, hit the deep ball.
Let's go to the team that you have claimed correctly, I think, that is Tennessee's biggest fans this week. That's the Ole Miss Rebels at Auburn. Ole Miss, a 6.5-point favorite on the road. May seem like a small margin to you, but I think there's a fear of Jordan-Hare Stadium of, like, look what Auburn did there to Georgia. Can they do that to other teams? And just the fear of what Ole Miss's defense can allow any team to do. But if you watched Auburn against LSU last week, it seems like the offense has gotten worse, less efficient. It was dreadful.
And I think one of the elements that we're seeing this season, because of somewhat of the parity pieces that we've talked about, is how much home field advantage matters and how teams play differently at home versus on the road. Like Tennessee at Florida versus Tennessee at home. Mm-hmm. Completely different teams right now. So Auburn at home, and this is given what Auburn just did, getting torched by LSU, you know, all of that, now coming home, this is like the ultimate trap game. But this is Hugh Freeze. Like, Hugh Freeze going against Ole Miss. Can you get one? Because I think he actually – it's one of those ones early in the year we're talking about, hey, he's going to get somebody probably. Is this the one? And I just – this game's fascinating because of the Hugh Freeze, Auburn, Lane Kiffin, all that talk. Like, all that – like, Lane used it to get a raise. Like, all that dynamic is fascinating to me. But I will say, this is the game where does Auburn bust out like double pass reverses, like kitchen sink type stuff.
Bet Jimmy Sexton has a nice suite for this game. Gonna have all the amenities in there. If Ole Miss is a true contender in the SEC, this is one of those that you need to have a business-like performance.
Yeah, this is
a double, not be in doubt. Yeah, don't let Auburn linger. Go in there and steal the hope out of them. If this gets to be final 6 minutes of the game and Auburn's within a possession, I think Ole Miss is probably not exactly who we think they are, or at least who they've been up to this point. And I'm not worried about Ole Miss scoring. I think it will do that. It's more so, can Auburn score? And that's in large part, what does Ole Miss do? Because any team that Ole Miss plays, I think, can score 40 on them. I really do believe that.
Yeah, I agree. And do we see more of Ashford this week? Because I think Thorne's kind of truly struggled, and Ashford at least gives them a big play element with the legs. I think you might see more of him this week.
I would be curious, and look, it's Georgia's bye weeks. I'm not saying specifically Georgia, but as these bye weeks come in the middle of the season, one thing that happens all around the country is players that haven't played as much as they wanted to, they start kind of complaining to coaches a little bit, or they start looking at different options or making their requests or kind of planning exits when it gets transfer time. Auburn needs them all. And so I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of text messages and DMs have been traded back and forth between players currently on rosters and people that Auburn end up needing, because those decisions need to happen in December and January, which means the conversations aren't starting in December and January.
No.
This is college football. It's illegal.
The current college football. Very true.
But it's what happens, especially with the way the signing day goes. Hey, we want to make sure you know about Brady Pest Management. They protect Sanford Stadium, the official pest control of the Georgia Bulldogs. One thing that I really love about Brady Pest Management is that they support high school teams in the area as well. So you'll see a lot of sponsorship, just really supporting football culture community in North Georgia, in the Atlanta area, in the Athens area. Brady Pest Management, they've been with us all season long, and we're just really thrilled to have them aboard. Again, they protect Sanford Stadium, they protect Stegman Coliseum and Foley Field, and they can protect your home as well. So when you see those pests, it's been the spiders around my house lately, they can make sure that those get out of there and stay away from you and your home and your loved ones and your pets. Get those out of there. Get them back in the woods where they belong. Breda Pest Management can do that for you. BredaPest.com. All right, Brent, staying in the SEC West, I want to go to Mississippi State and Arkansas here because neither team has a win in the league. So one of them is going to find the first one. But Arkansas, I feel bad for Sam Pittman in a way because it seems like it doesn't matter who they play. They're just a possession short.
Yep. Always. Another three-point loss. They had a chance to beat Bama in that game. I mean, the respect level for KJ Jefferson just is through the roof. Watching him compete when he could have completely mailed that game in, competed like crazy, gave him a chance. This is kind of the forever QB battle with Jefferson versus Will Rogers. And what's interesting with Arkansas is, like we talked about, like do they get now the rest of their schedule is teams that they aren't massively at a talent disadvantage, at least on the high end. And they're kind of comparable to all the teams that they play the rest of the way. They could finish five straight wins and end up like 7-5.
That schedule's Mississippi State at Florida, Auburn, but that's at home, which is good. FIU and then Missouri.
Yeah, they could win all five of those games. But they could also lose four out of five. I don't think they lose to FIU, but like and that's you know, so your best case is 7-5, your worst case is 3-9. Do they end up kind of somewhere in the middle of that? But what's interesting for me with this is, you know, the energy that Pittman kind of injected into the program, obviously because of what it was with Morris, was good. But what's the peak? Like, what's the ceiling for that program? I don't really like. Is an 8-4, 9-3 SEC season a ceiling? I don't know. And who's next? I will say, like, to me, it feels like this might be his last year potentially. And I think for a school like that, I'd go find the young offensive coach that you might get sort of lightning in a bottle with, someone like the Texas State head coach, Kenny, I think is his last name.
I just look at this and, you know, how much patience do you have as an athletic director for a team that's close in terms of, like, the games are close, even against the better teams. Arkansas is usually within a possession, 10 points. Do you think that there's a way to get over the hump with that? Pittman is beloved there. His players like him. They still play for him to the point that you're making. Those are all good traits. But, there's a point there, and we've seen this happen in the NFL too, where if you get close just over the course of multiple years, maybe you just can't do it. And, you know, the proverbial over the hump, it's a big hump for Arkansas. I mean, when you're talking potentially three wins.
And what's interesting about it is, and this is with the sort of new world of college football, is how much they jumped into the portal and had to jump in the portal, and how much you see teams that are kind of in that middle of the pack that jump in the portal, maybe have a great season, a la Mel Tucker at Michigan State or early levels with Pittman. And when you consistently jump in, now you're in the portal in each and every year, you're also consistently not consistent on the football field. Like recruiting matters so much, at least to be that upper echelon. Then you fill in the gaps with the portal. And I don't know that you can get there with that unless you have the latest and the greatest where people truly want to be there.
For as low as things feel at Arkansas, I would not be pleased with the coaching situation in Mississippi State right now. And I know it's an unfortunate one. I don't think you make a change after a year when Arnett stepped in there for the late Mike Leach. I just don't – defense was what they were supposed to be good at, and they're not. And so I think after next year, probably Mississippi State retools and figures it out. We'll see. Maybe next year, Arnett with a full year, he gets better. But it's the hardest league in the world. I mean, the SEC West doesn't exist anymore.
It's not getting any easier either.
Yeah, you just add more good teams that, you know, maybe the Cowbells affect people like that. I don't know. Battle of Columbia is on the SEC Network at 3 o'clock Eastern time. This is 2:30 local time there in Missouri. Missouri is 7-point favorite against South Carolina. We've seen South Carolina compete with some teams. No painkillers for Shane Beamer after missing up his foot, kicking something after that loss to Florida. He probably should have kicked something. He said that he shouldn't have acted like that, but South Carolina should have beaten Florida, and it didn't. Yeah. And it played poorly at the end of that game. So I understand the frustration, just maybe not the action of it. All to say, I'm pretty high on Missouri right now, and Missouri's won four straight against South Carolina. It seems like a tall task for me for South Carolina to get to 3-4 after this game.
Yes, and also, like, this is like trap game in all caps for Missouri, because after this bye week, after the bye week at Georgia, like, this is the ultimate, and you just had a big win on the road at Kentucky, ultimate trap game for Missouri. And like I said earlier, technically against Kentucky, it was their worst graded from an execution standpoint offensive game of the season. Yet with Cook making play, the few plays he made, Theo Weiss on the outside, Burden, we've already consistently talked about, like, their running game, like, they got some guys that can pressure the QB. They should handle and take care of their business in this game, but they've almost been in every game outside of Kentucky in a way has been a game like that. So I could see this being a four-quarter game just because of what the college age mind that says, all right, hey, let's just get through this bye week. Then we got the humongous game at Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to do because I look at this game and I say, knowing what's left on Georgia's schedule, I think Missouri's the toughest matchup remaining just in terms of on the field, what I've seen.
Yes.
I think Georgia's going to be able to score on Ole Miss. I don't think Tennessee's going to be able to score much on Georgia. Florida, I mean, we'll see. I don't see a whole lot there to be afraid of, especially for downfield passing. So I look at it and say, which team on Georgia's schedule can tax the Bulldogs the most? And I think it's Missouri, but again, like you say, only if all the stakes are on the table there. Because if they lose this to South Carolina, all of a sudden they roll into Athens and don't have the juice that they need to really do anything meaningful in that game. But if you essentially have the SEC East on the line, which we think Alabama is going to beat Tennessee, I think Georgia will beat Florida next week. That would essentially, maybe not officially, but that would put SEC East, the final one on the line in Athens with Missouri at Georgia.
Yeah, and I really wanted to be able to ask Coach this week if he'd ever actually done anything Beamer-esque like that after a game. And I know once I threw a like clipboard thing, like a little play sheet holder, and busted it once. I got really mad, but never kicked and broke a foot.
If you remember on the dog vent early before the season, I said, I think that this will be the last time that Kirby Smart coaches against Shane Beamer, meaning that Georgia and South Carolina, because after the schedule change, Georgia doesn't play South Carolina regular season next year. So I was meaning that I didn't think Shane Beamer would survive this year and next year to be back against Georgia in 2025. And people thought I was insane. But you look at South Carolina's results so far, not going to be pretty for the Gamecocks.
They're trending towards a four-win season.
Yeah, and that puts you on the hot seat going into next year. And, you know, who knows what their schedule turns out to be, but it'd take a big turnaround for them. If you need to make a big turnaround in your yard, you need to call Connor Grading and Landscaping, because, Brent, I told you about this a few months ago, that I had a water pipe that I had to have replaced that was in the ground. My water bill was going crazy. And they said, yeah, there were some roots down there from this tree that's beside your house, and that probably had something to do with it. So in frustration, just because, you know, there's a tree beside my house and it cost me $4,000 to have a pipe placed in the ground, I just grabbed a chainsaw and just started hacking at this tree and just saying, I'm going to at least take out my frustration and make this tree less of a problem for me. And I don't know that I actually did that because I'm not an expert in any of these things. So I should have called Connor Grading and Landscaping, because not only would they have solved that issue, but then they would have made it look beautiful after and made it where I wouldn't have to deal with the same thing again. And so I need to get Mike Connor and his group out there to take care of this tree, take care of these roots, and maybe just give some ideas for how I can prevent this from happening next time, because they know way more about this than I do. So ConnorGrading.com is where you can do that. Are you about set to have them come look at your house? I know that you've had some projects.
I get one more thing done, and then yes.
Okay.
I got the same sort of thing with some trees. I get that sort of taken care of. Do some labor maybe this weekend on the bye week, and then time to get some stuff done.
I'd offer to come help you, but I promise you don't want the help if you just came and looked at the tree that I started hacking at with a chainsaw. I'm not the expert. That's why Connor Grading and Landscaping is, and they can help you make your home tailgate look as great as it possibly can. All right, final game here in the league, correct? Yes, it is Army at LSU. Who put this on a schedule, LSU? Some administrator not understanding triple option football here. LSU's a 31-point favorite at home, which if you're gambling, take Army. Take those points.
They haven't given up 30 points yet this season.
And that clock is going to run, because LSU has no interest in making this a long, drawn-out game.
How quickly do you get Jaden Daniels out of this game? That's the question for me.
I wouldn't have Harold Perkins on the bus. I would put other people out there and say, y'all get your knees hacked out all game. Not Harold.
Yeah. This is a true survive, get to the bye week, get ready for the big one against Alabama the following week.
Army's 2-4. LSU's 5-2. I've been more impressed than I thought I'd be with LSU's running game as a whole. Daniels I knew about, but it was just kind of a mixed bag at running back for the Tigers. And it seems like they're kind of finding more balance on offense than I originally thought that they had. So I don't know where that turns out to be. I still think they may struggle to score some points on Alabama. I think that's going to be more of a traditional LSU-Bama game once we get there. But overall, Jaden Daniels, he's throwing the ball downfield. He's not protecting his body, but he's protecting the ball.
Yeah, and he's taken a very much big leap forward as a passer compared to the previous season. And that's what you want to see from guys who come back and play that fourth or fifth year or extra year or extra 2 years or whatever they all play now. But, yeah, he's definitely taken a leap forward. His threat as a runner amplifies their running game, I think, and they're in a good spot to go into Tuscaloosa and see what they're all about.
That's all upcoming, but we have a little bit to get there. Just taking a peek ahead to the schedule for next week, just things that I know we will be talking about. We'll have Georgia, Florida. I do think that Tennessee and Kentucky could be a little squirrely, just having to be at Kentucky there. Who knows? Not the greatest schedule next week in the SEC. South Carolina A&M is just one of like, yes. Somebody's got to score, right?
It's Georgia, Florida carrying the boat next week.
And that's fine. That means a lot of good talk here on our channel from UGASports.com. We're over 40,000 subscribers. So if you like what we're doing, make sure you subscribe as well and join the 40,000 plus that have made us the leader in the market in terms of YouTube here covering the Georgia Bulldogs. But we love talking SEC as well. You and I will have a lot of NFL draft coverage in the offseason. And we kind of start looking ahead to that now. I was thinking about that with Jaden Daniels of like, all right, this is probably a guy that's going to get some NFL looks at this point. If showing the way he's throwing downfield.
Yeah, I'm very the where, like at what point, like that's a very intriguing. I don't know that he's a round one guy.
I'm confident that he's not a give me equity in the franchise Caleb Williams request kind of guy. I don't know if you saw that story.
Oh yeah, that was ridiculous.
shoot your shot. And I'm sure the owners are like, okay, you can stay at USC and take your NIL money. We'll take it. We'll take Drake May and have a good day.
Well, yes, exactly. Very much so. One last thing, though. Do you think Penn State finally gets over the hump and gets a dub in Columbus?
I do not.
Because there's like Dane Brugler that does the draft stuff, like 20 guys that are potential top 100 players in this game. Just a sort of bevy of scouts will be there. James Franklin to me reminds kind of like, it's very similar to me, like the Mark Richt era at Georgia, where it's you're always good, really good, but not quite elite. So, you know, can they actually get one?
Do you think they will?
Of the two games, I think this game is a better matchup for them than the Michigan game in terms of the style of play and how they do things. But I think they get Michigan at home, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So, you know, this one's on the road. McCord has done okay, but not anything special. Like Ohio State's more of a defensive team this year. I don't know.
A defensive team with Marvin Harrison Jr., though. And as long as he's there, I'm going to believe they can score something.
Yes. In the end, I'll go with the home team there.
Yeah. Minnesota, Iowa. Will more than 20 points be scored?
Total? No.
The over-under is 31.5. Take that under. Run away. Run away with that.
That would be an interesting follow.
I don't know that it will, but, you know, we can check on it anyway. Iowa, Wisconsin, maybe you're saying interesting in like the sickos way.
Yes.
Of old school Big Ten football.
Yes. Everybody that's, like that within like 5 yards of the ball.
More of that's happening in the SEC this year, kind of by necessity. It's not quite the Pac-12.
No.
We're going to land the plane here, everyone. Thanks for watching Around the League here from UGASports.com. For Brent Rollins, I'm Dane Young. We'll see you next week.